This is me, 101.1 FM, Eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independent Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
This is the Voice of Freedom. Listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Ladies and gentlemen, this is going to be quite an hour. We're going to have our guest calling in here in just about another minute. And when he does, we're going to take you on a trip to the desert of Nevada, where, according to the United States government, the United States Air Force, United States Navy, the United States Army, there is nothing there. This is what they tell us. However, I know different. I have climbed to the top of a couple of mountains before they were grabbed, stolen from the public domain, and placed behind the National Security Act and sealed off forever. I have photographs of what's there. I also have videotape. So when they tell me that there is nothing there in the Groom Dry Lake area known as Area 51, in the desert of Nevada, I know they're lying big time through their teeth, and they know it. I also obtained a satellite photograph from the Russians a long time ago, which is published in my book, which shows all the facilities. Now, folks, when I went to try to get a satellite photograph of the area from the United States government, I was told that there weren't any. And if there were, I couldn't have it. But I was able to get one from the Russians, and so, who do you think they're keeping this secret from? How you doing there, Scott?
Hey, Wild Bill, how you doing? I'm doing great.
I'm doing fine. I'm going to turn this up just here a little bit so that the listening audience can hear you better.
Okay, I'll try to talk right in the phone.
You're doing fine. I was just giving everybody a sort of a warm-up going into what we're going to be talking about.
Okay.
And, folks, many, many years ago when I was attached to the Office of Naval Intelligence and specifically found out all of this information when I was on the intelligence briefing team of the Commander-in-Chief of the United States Pacific Fleet, who at that time was Admiral Bernard Clary, I discovered that they were testing advanced technology in the desert in Nevada in a place called Area 51, also known as Groom Dry Lake or Dreamland. And this technology is so far beyond what the public could even perceive as existing that you're going to find it hard to believe even as we discuss it. So hold on, folks. Scott Stonehouse is on the line. He's our guest tonight. He was with me and a whole bunch of other people out in the desert of Nevada over the Labor Day weekend, and we're going to tell you what we saw. Hold on. Don't go away. I'll be right back after this short preparation musical theme type spookiness thing. You're probably all wondering, what's that music all about? Well, you know, wait a couple of years and you'll see if they use this technology to do what we believe that they may be planning to do. They may present the world with a golden boy to sit on the throne as a sort of messiah in order to bring all the religions and all the nation states together in a one world government and have their world utopian socialism. That's what they want. And we found a lot of evidence for this, folks. But we're not going to get into that tonight. We'll do that on some other night, and we've done it many times in the past. We're going to, right now, go on a trip. Where are you from, Scott? Tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, well, I'm from originally from Wisconsin, and we moved out here to New Mexico, I'd say 1977, so just about 20 years ago. And we live southeast of Albuquerque in the mountains, and real beautiful place. Tall pine trees. We're about at 7,800 feet. Air is clear. It's a great place to live and to raise children. So we're planning to stay here.
Well, that's great. You're only 300 feet higher than we are.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, you said you were about 7,500, yeah.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
the town around us is actually about 7,200 feet, and we're about 300 feet above them on this little mountain perched in the middle of a valley.
Yeah, and when I drove through your area the other day on the way to Area 51, I noticed that, you know, it's just, you're just really across the border, and it looks just like New Mexico there.
Yeah.
Yeah, not much different, you know.
You know, you do. You have a profession that you showed me some of your work, photographs anyway, and you are one of the best finished carpenters that I've ever seen, I think.
Well, thank you. I try. I get real challenges thrown my way. I've done a lot of custom work for interior designers and decorators, and they have me doing sometimes Louis XIV duplications and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
A little more modern, though, things that carry, you know, stereos and televisions and speakers in there. And it's a lot of fun. It's real challenging. It's hard to make money at it, though. That's, you know, like anything.
Well, that's a shame, because good Finnish carpenters, good carpenters of any kind, are hard to come by today, and it would seem to me like they'd be in great demand. But with all these weird fake materials and things, I can see where that, you know, might be the case.
Yeah, I wind up competing against factories. You know, I've bid jobs before and had people tell me, well, I can buy that for $1,200 in a store, and I said, gee, I got to pay $1,500 for the materials alone, you know.
Yeah.
But then I use real materials too.
So. That's true. You use real hardwoods, and
exactly.
I doubt very seriously if he's telling the truth, because from what I've seen in the photographs of your work, nobody can buy that anywhere for any kind of a reasonable price.
Well, yeah, that kind of stuff. The work I was showing you is real hard to find out there in a factory-made store. Yeah.
Non-existent, if you ask me.
I love it. It's a good thing. I like working with my hands. It's a real good thing. Yeah.
Scott, how did you hear about Area 51?
Boy, I'm not sure. I've heard about it for a long time. I may well have heard about it first on your show. I'm not sure. I have seen things on television too. It's got to be quite commonplace, at least among myself, you know, my friends. It's amazing. I told people. My next door neighbor, for instance, I was going to Area 51. He said, "What's that?" And that surprised me. I didn't think anybody didn't know what Area 51 was, because it's really pretty well known now on television, you know.
Well, there's still quite a few people who don't. You started. How long did it take you to get there? You drove with a friend?
Yeah, right. We left from Pie Town. It took us about 13 hours, and that's about an hour east of you.
Uh-huh.
So I think it was about 13 hours, with, you know, considering the time change.
When did you and your companion, driving companion, realize that you might be getting in to some real desolation?
Yeah, we knew that. Of course, we sort of live in the desert, you know. I wasn't aware. I've never been in that area before. I didn't realize quite how desolate it is. It's incredibly desolate out there. And that has its own totally unique beauty. I fell in love with the entire area. You know, it was just gorgeous out there, and I want to go back with my family. You know, I think that'd be a little more pleasurable.
When did you get there?
We got there, let's see, it was just after sunset on Friday night, because I remember that because we were watching this really strange little cloud in the sky, I would say, for about 20 or 30 miles just prior to arriving in Rachel at the Ailey Inn.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the cloud that I told you on Sunday when you were showing the film, the second part of the red light video.
Yeah.
I said, man, you just took that image right out of my mind. That's exactly what we saw. And then you explained to me what it was I had seen. You know.
What you actually saw was a cloud with something hovering under it.
Right. It looked like, and this was, we figured, about 20 miles away, it looked like a really thick, short little contrail or vapor trail. If you were to hold your fingers out at arm's length, I would say it'd be about 2 inches long. And it moved slightly, and as it moved, it seemed to get a little longer, and then the length of it would dissipate, and it'd just be the same little 2-inch, real, you know, definite streak in the sky. The sun was behind it, and yet the face of it was glowing this sort of a sunset golden color. And that puzzled me at first, and the density of it puzzled me. It seemed extremely dense, much more dense than a cloud or a vapor trail.
But after you saw my video, and you saw what I had videotaped out there, which is commonly called a cigar-shaped craft.
Right.
And then you saw the actual craft that they're testing above Area 51, then you knew what you saw.
Exactly, yeah. We were so tired and hot and hungry. My eyeballs were sunburned from that setting sun driving through the desert, you know, that I guess my brain wasn't working too well. I wasn't really sure what I was seeing, but when I saw that film Sunday afternoon, I looked at my friend, and he was staring at me already, and we both just, our eyes were wide open, and that's when I said, that is exactly what we saw.
He actually turned pale when he saw the videotape.
He did, yeah, right, right.
It was like he had seen a ghost or something.
Yeah, right, because he was kind of being a little skeptical. You know, he's going, it's just a cloud, and I'm going, Dick, this is not a cloud here. You know, this is something different. I don't know what it is. But you know, that was after 12 hours of driving through the desert, too. So, But it was literally as if you pulled the image from my mind. It was that close. I mean, if I took a picture and held it next to that video, it would be identical to what you had felt that time. And where else do you hide a mile-long ship like that?
Yeah, and these things are huge, aren't they?
Yeah, it was just tremendously view. So.
Now, your friend didn't want to believe any of this, did he?
Yeah, no, he didn't, but he
in
was
fact, he was, he was tremendously skeptical from the word go, and when he got there, he probably asked me more challenging questions than, in fact, he did. He asked me more challenging questions than anybody, and the look on his face for the first 2 days was, you know, this is just a big bunch of baloney. You're putting me on.
Yeah, right, right. I know it. That's actually a good kind of person to have along. You want to have skeptical people.
Oh, yeah.
So when I'm looking up at the skies at night, and I generally just go out to look at the stars because they're so beautiful up here, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not really looking for anything in particular, and or actually nothing in particular. I'm trying to pick out constellations and planets and just having fun sitting on my front deck, you know. And that's when I see things, and I'm very skeptical, too. I really try to prove that it's something other than what it might be, you know. So I'm very skeptical, and there's just some things I can't dismiss. I don't know what they are that I see, and they're not clouds, they're not aircraft, they're nothing that I can understand. So I try to apply that same kind of skepticism, you know, because I think that's a smart thing to do. You can't go out and be gullible and be calling all kinds of things UFOs, or you lose all your credibility, you know.
Sure, of course. Well, actually, you can. You can call anything that you see in the sky that you cannot identify a UFO, because UFO does not mean spacecraft.
Right,
it does
right.
not mean something from another world.
Right.
It does not mean there's extraterrestrial alien pilots. Mm-hmm. It doesn't even mean that it's anything, you know, worthwhile. It could be a plastic bag that's been blown up there by the wind.
Right.
But if you can't identify it, it's an unidentified flying object.
And what I try to do is identify these things, you know. And
yeah.
when I can't, then, of course, they are an unidentified object in the sky.
Now, when you see a huge craft floating above a super top secret United States government test site
uh-huh.
where anything that's in the air there can be legally and lawfully shot down
yeah.
and will be.
Right, exactly.
And it's not challenged or anything, then you know that that's
part of the installation.
That's part of the installation.
Right, and we discussed that. We, you know, I mean, I'm thinking about where would you land something a mile in diameter, and it's inconceivable to me to even have a craft that size, but the best place to hide that is probably in plain view, which appeared to be what they were doing. It was just sitting up there, you know.
Well,
and,
it's something
that people would look at and think, they would just dismiss it, you know.
It's so far beyond the traditional belief structure of the average person that if they saw something like that in the sky, they would be curious and would probably watch it for a little bit, but then would rationalize it away very quickly.
Exactly.
Because it challenges everything that they've ever been taught.
It challenges their entire belief system, yeah. They can't suspend that belief so readily, you know.
But some people around the world are not hiding behind belief systems, and millions of people have seen these things.
Yeah.
No, not when it only takes the testimony of two credible witnesses to sentence a man to the electric chair.
Exactly, right, yeah. I mentioned that one when Flight 800 went down, and there were hundreds of witnesses that saw missiles streaking towards it, and no one believed or listened to the witnesses, and I was saying the same thing. It only takes two men to sentence a man to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But nobody wants to listen to almost 300 witnesses who saw a missile hit Flight 800.
Exactly, and what, four of them were F-16 pilots, I think, combat-ready
yeah.
pilots.
And some helicopter pilots, and pilots of a military transport plane.
Exactly, and these guys know what missiles look like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right.
Okay, let's get back to everything. When you got there, what did you do?
We ate. That was the first thing. I was going to order a green chili cheeseburger, but when I got there, I thought, that sounded a little heavy, so I had a BLT, you know. And we just kind of relaxed, and I would say within an hour, we all gathered together as a group, and I introduced myself to you, and we were on the road to Area 51 that night.
And where did we go?
And we went about 20 miles in from the mailbox at the 29.5-mile marker.
Well, didn't we stop at the mailbox first?
Yeah, we did stop there first, right. Yeah, we stopped there, and we stopped there several times throughout the trip. That was kind of a stopping point for us. We stopped there for a while, talked about it, and then we took off and headed to one of those two hills that was, it looked like 2 miles away for me, but I think you said it was about 6 or 7 miles, perhaps, from those little hills that hide the actual area and the installation.
Yeah, at night the distances are deceptive. Where we were at, the actual installation is a good 5 to 7 miles beyond there.
Yeah, it looked closer to me, but mountains always do that to
And what did you think when we started down these dirt roads and you were enveloped by this huge cloud of dust and you didn't know where we were going, and we took several sharp turns and zigged around. And once
doing 70 miles an hour. That's when I started calling you Wild Bill.
Yeah, you were all following me, and I was doing about 70 miles an hour down these dirt roads. Because right, I didn't want to waste your time.
No, that dust was incredible. That was like, I have never seen anything more invasive than that dust. I had the vent open rather than had it on recirculation.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, the interior of the car filled up with that dust. So I had to roll the windows down, and my truck will probably never be the same.
Wow.
But it was a gap. It was just incredible.
Did you get a little confused and disoriented?
Not really. No, I've got a pretty good sense of direction, and I try to maintain that and keep that, you know, especially out there. I wanted to know where was the west, and I was looking for the North Star, so I had that all pretty well figured out. When I was in the dust cloud, of course, there was no way I could tell where I was.
Yeah. Most of the people on the way in got completely disoriented, had no idea where they were, how many roads we had gone down, or anything.
You had pointed out where we were going from the mailbox.
Right.
So I had a pretty good idea from there, but I got a little turned around because we drove down. I think that night we drove down, took the road past the ranch.
Yes, that's correct.
That real sharp left turn away from the ranch. And that kind of turned me around a little bit. But once I got out and could look up at the sky, I knew where we were. And, you know, I spotted that one tall mountain that you can't climb anymore. And that's a pretty good landmark to use, you know.
Yeah, that's one of the mountains we used to climb up to photograph and videotape the actual installation. The ranch is the Steve Medlin Ranch, and the mailbox at the 29.5-mile marker on Highway 375 is actually his mailbox.
Right.
And it's not the same mailbox that used to be.
That's an armored box now.
Yeah, this box is armored because the old mailbox, people should not have done it, but it had been severely abused, and people had shot holes in it. I don't know why anybody would do anything like that, but they did. And so I guess this was about the third mailbox.
Yeah, and probably some people took that as a souvenir, too.
Yeah, I think the original one may have been stolen.
You said there have been several since then. This one looked like you'd have to have a nice-sized truck and a big chain to get this one down.
Yeah, nobody's going to take this one. Nobody's going to shoot a hole in it either.
Yeah, there were a few messages written on the top of it, too. That was kind of funny, you know.
Mm-hmm.
People get real angry. You know, I know who you are and what you're doing, and, you know, there are some crazy messages there. I wouldn't feel real comfortable if I was that guy, you know.
No.
I wouldn't want to put myself in that position.
When we got out to where we were going, I actually took you up a hill, and then you discovered why I had cautioned everybody to get a four-wheel drive vehicle.
Yeah, right. That was a fairly steep hill, yeah.
And
it was a small hill, too. You also cautioned us not to drive too far on the top of it, because it dropped off pretty well. You know?
You go right over the cliff on the other side.
Right, right. In the dark, you can't see that, you know, so, yeah. That was a good spot. I actually liked the spot across the street a little better, and I'm not sure why, but some places feel a little better, you know.
Yeah, I think everybody did.
Yeah,
so what
right, that was a great spot. The parking was better, too, so we felt a little more comfortable there, you know.
And it was dark out there, wasn't it?
Oh, it was pitch black. Yeah, there was no moon and
no street lights.
Oh, yeah. I thought just the lights of Las Vegas 100 miles away, that was just a little glow in the sky, a big glow, really.
Yeah, but that's all that there was.
Oh, there was nothing else out there except the spotlights and the lights from the Range Rovers that were constantly on the move.
Now, who were those guys?
Those are the Whack and Hut security people.
And
we never really got to see the people, but we saw the vehicles everywhere, and they're quite a large and intimidating presence.
Yeah, they would watch us to see where we would go, and then they would slowly but surely move their vehicles to close in around us.
Oh, yeah, they were always in a position to triangulate on us.
Yes.
So they had our exact location. And then they were shining their spotlights at us, too, and trying to destroy the night vision. And that last night, those spotlights were really strange because the reflection on the trucks appeared that they were, I'm trying to think how to describe that. If you had a can of water and you hooked a small vibrator to the pan and made the water vibrate, it looked like the lights were shining through something like that. And I don't know. You may have been curled up with Crusher at that time. I'm not sure. If you saw
that or not. I remember that. They were
remember that?
Yeah, they were east of us.
Yeah, what kind of lights would do that, because this one light, this guy wasn't moving. I could see that, but the reflection looked like it was shining through running water.
I have no idea. All I know is it was bright, and they would do it from time to time to try to destroy our night vision so that we couldn't see it.
And after that, my camera wouldn't work.
That's another strange thing.
That's another strange one. That's a good camera. It's a Minolta.
And what did work, worked backwards from that point on.
Exactly. Yeah, the light meter worked backwards. And when I took it into the expert here that I use, he's a real good camera guy in town. He said weird about five times. So I finally said where I was when it failed. And boy, his eyes lit up, and he had a lot of questions for me. So they're going to try to demagnetize it. That's what we've all agreed. I talked to you about it earlier.
Mm-hmm.
Sounded like it took a magnetic charge.
Yeah, they have all kinds of ways out there to prevent you from taking pictures and destroy your night vision. And they actually have some things in place that when they have it operating makes you feel nauseous.
Right, or panicky, you said. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all that stuff. And then it's about the tones in the ear. You can hear tones inside your head.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't experience that, but I've heard of that and read of that before, too. So those are the silent weapons, you know.
I think they were trying to be very careful not to pop the bubble that Popular Mechanics has just recently built around a lie.
Oh, that Area 51 has moved to the Colorado Del Norte area.
Has it moved?
Yeah. I've spent time up in Colorado there, and I've never seen much up there myself.
Has it moved, Scott?
No, it has not moved. No, definitely not. There was a glow of lights that we could see, a dim glow above those mountains, those small hills. And we also saw a searchlight one night moving around down there.
Yeah, and we also saw them testing the craft on Sunday night, which we'll get into later. I don't want to get into that.
Right, yeah, not to mention that. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Right. And a lot of shooting stars that I questioned because they had no tails at all. They had no trails. And I'm not used to seeing shooting stars that don't have a tail. So I got a feeling some of those craft are coming down at a speed that makes them appear to be shooting stars, and they were all aiming right for the area, so I was getting very suspicious. You know what I was saying out there, my statement was, I may not know much, but I suspect a lot, right?
Yeah, I remember that.
So that's where I stand on that one.
Yeah. Well, for people who doubt that these craft can move that fast, I have seen a streak of light come up out of the test site and just go right up into space.
Just like a shooting star in reverse,
just like
right?
A shooting star in reverse. I have watched it. In fact, I have it on videotape.
And I think some of those shooting stars we watched, because so many of them, almost, I would say 95% of the ones I saw that night were vertical. They came straight down and they aimed right for the site. And that's a little too much coincidence to swallow.
Yeah, but we can't prove it. We don't know.
We can't. Exactly. Yeah, we may not know much, but we suspect a lot, right?
Yeah. But we did see a lot of shooting stars. Some of them suspicious, like you say, that came straight down right into the test site and
had no tails.
And others that did have tails and were just beautiful.
Some were definitely shooting stars. Yeah. I missed that real spectacular one you guys were talking about, but I've seen those before. And those are beautiful, and they change into different colors and things.
Uh huh. And the night sky was just incredible.
It was fantastic. You know, I think I have a clear, beautiful sky here, and I do, but it is nothing compared to the sky in the middle of that desert.
Well, that's only because the air is really clear.
It really is.
There's no pollution.
And it's clear, and it really sucks the moisture out of you, too. So
yeah.
I kept that 5-gallon jug of water in the back, and a lot of people were using it, so I was glad I had that along.
And there's no lights out there. There's no light pollution of any kind.
Nothing at all except those spotlights and the headlights of the Range Rovers.
Right.
That were everywhere. That must be a boring job for those guys.
I imagine that it probably is.
Yeah.
They probably know every talk radio show that's on all night in the world.
Yeah, right.
Okay, hold on. We're going to take a short break here, and then we'll get back, and we'll go into Saturday and what we did then, and then we'll go into Sunday and talk about what everybody's hanging on the edge of their chair waiting to hear.
All right.
Out on those trails, out beneath that sky, rivers of old, still rushing by. mine. Eagles still soar. White mountains move.
Back and got to bed about 3:30, I thought, and I think I was up by 8:30.
Oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry. It was 2:30 that we left.
Yeah, right. 2:30. It was like 3 or 3:30 by the time we got back.
It was 2:30 when we left, and it was about 3. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we got less sleep than that, because I know when the sun comes up, it's really cold in there. We had to zip up all the, we took the pop-top camper, and we had to zip it all up except for a little breathing room. And it was very chilly at night. And, of course, as soon as that sun came up, man, there was no way we could sleep in that camper anymore.
Now, a lot of people didn't believe a few of the things that I told. Number one, they really didn't understand the reason for all the four-wheel drives.
Yeah.
But we were very, very fortunate that most people obeyed my instructions and did rent a four-wheel drive. And so we had an abundance of vehicles that were able to go where we wanted to go.
Right. That ground was pretty soft. That's when that one car got stuck. That was real soft sand out there.
And that was the only non-four-wheel drive vehicle.
Right, but he made it out. He was out within 10 minutes. Yeah. You know, that was no big deal.
Thanks to a little help from his friend.
Right, right. I had those big mud tires, so I bet I was throwing up a lot of dust behind me. I felt real sorry for the people behind me, because I know what my tires do.
Also, the fact that it gets cold in the desert at night.
Oh, yeah. Well, sitting around gets cold anyway, but that it was very cold, and there was a wind, almost a constant wind blowing right at our faces, and our ears would get cold, and you'd get it around the neck.
Yeah.
The next time I go, I'm bringing ski clothes or something really warm to wear.
Because it's like winter in the desert at night. They couldn't believe it. They thought I was crazy when I told them what to bring out to wear at night, because it was 98 degrees when I told them that.
Yeah. In fact, the day we arrived, I think, was over 100 that day.
Yeah.
And it must have gotten down to, what, about 40, 45?
It got cold.
Yeah, yeah.
And everybody was
out there all night long in a chair or standing up and trying to stamp your feet. It really gets to you after a while. I had my sleeping bag the second night wrapped around me. I had on a sweatshirt, and I had sweatpants over my blue jeans and a sweatshirt over a long-sleeve shirt and a heavy leather jacket and a hat on, and I still wrapped up in my sleeping bag.
You look like King Two Fat's mummy, as a matter of fact.
It's what? I'm sorry?
You look like King Two Fat's mummy.
Yeah, right.
And what did we do on Saturday?
Saturday, well, we watched part one. We got up and had breakfast and milled around, had a little free time. I bought some postcards and wrote them out. We didn't have a lot of free time. And then in the afternoon, we watched the part one of the red light video and had a real interest. I think it was that day. Well, both days we had a real good conversation. All kind of sat around chairs and on the floor and talked and had a real good time. And you talked a lot, and everybody was, I'm always glad to listen to you. So my friend was more anxious to talk to you. I like to listen more. You know.
Well, he asked some pretty pointed questions, which sort of guided the conversation.
Yeah.
And hopefully cast some illumination,
so to speak, yeah.
out there.
Right, he will keep you thinking.
Yes, he will.
Yes, indeed. That's good. I like to think.
So we watched Project Red Light, which was actually the first of two videos that I made years ago.
Right.
About the, which included photographs and videotape footage of what they're testing out there.
Right. That was actually the video that I first saw that you had made that introduced me to you in the first place.
Uh-huh.
And from then I went out and got the book right away and read Behold the Pale Horse. And the rest, as they say, is history, you know.
Now, the videotape actually acquainted everybody quite thoroughly with the whole area.
Right.
And what
how
we
to
had
get there and the roads in and everything, yeah.
Uh-huh.
That was quite interesting.
Showed them what flares looked like in the night sky, what the stars looked like, what the planets looked like, what the security vehicle lights looked like, so they wouldn't get confused with all of these things.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a lot of people are from the city, and I don't think a lot of city people really see the stars so much, because there's so many lights in the city, and they're not aware of the difference in planets and stars and how to identify them. And unless you've been around the military a bit, you're not real familiar with flares either.
Yeah.
So I think that was a real good thing to do and real necessary, and it helps to keep people from pointing at things that really are nothing, you know.
So we went out Saturday night. What did we see Saturday night?
Saturday night, let's see. We didn't have a sighting Saturday night.
No.
I think we went on the other hill that night.
That's correct.
And that was the night
Yeah, we stayed at the mailbox a little bit, and then we went up up on another hill.
Yeah, right across the road there, yeah.
And during that day, was it that day or the next day that I took you up to the entrance of the test site?
I think that was Saturday afternoon, too, yeah.
Okay.
Because Sunday we went to the Rattlesnake Mountain.
Yeah.
So I took that day, yeah, we went to the entrance to the road, and that was quite a place. That was a very, very serious feeling around that point.
A little spooky, wasn't it?
It was quite spooky, yeah. We could see electronic surveillance equipment on, I saw three, towering stands.
Video cameras, sensors.
And then the Land Rover up on the hill watching us. The guy got out of the truck and watched us. And
yeah.
You warned us not to take pictures there because the signs all say photography is prohibited and use of deadly force is authorized. So
yeah, now tell the listening audience that the sign really said that.
Oh, it really said that, yeah. And actually, I can prove that because I did kind of squeeze off one shot before I got out of the truck. I suppose I don't know if I should admit that on
well,
the or not.
Well, pretend we never heard of you.
Yeah, either. Right. But yeah, it's a very heavy place. We stood out there. There were two towers with small light. Satellite dishes on top and some antenna coming out the side.
And video cameras.
On another hill, there was a tripod that one of the guys spotted, and it had a big box on top that was camouflaged, but you could see it was obviously some sort of surveillance equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Off in the distance was the tower on top of that one big mountain, and behind that, almost 180 degrees across, was the Land Rover on top of the hill. And yeah, we were being watched, and it was the things that we couldn't see, I think, that made people more nervous.
Yeah, and in fact, I told you before we ever left the Little Indian that when we got to the entrance to the test site, there would be a security vehicle there.
And there was. In fact, I saw some show on TV, and it showed the same type of vehicle parked in exactly the same spot. So I had a lot of feelings of deja vu when I was out there,
And, okay, so we didn't see anything Saturday night except the beautiful sky and some more meteor showers and,
actually, we didn't see anything. We didn't see really any aircraft. We didn't see a thing, and it may have been because of Labor Day weekend, but being right there by Nellis Air Force Base, I'm right here by Kirtland Air Force Base, and there's always jets flying around. They stop and refuel, they take off, they're always doing things, and I really, being that close to Dallas, I expected to see more craft around, and it was unusually quiet, I think.
Yeah, well, sometimes they take holidays, too.
Yeah, right. That's what we attributed it to, yeah.
And then Sunday, what happened? We went back, went to sleep, and got up, ate breakfast again. And then
usually, 3 to 4 hours of sleep that night, and I had a big breakfast. I was really getting into the food there. They have great food. And then we had about an hour or so, and we got together again and took a ride over to Rattlesnake Mountain, and that was a gas.
It's actually called Crystal Mountain.
Oh, it is Crystal Mountain. Okay, I heard Rattlesnake, yeah.
Well, Joe likes to call it Rattlesnake Mountain because he's found some pretty humongous rattlesnakes out there.
Yeah, I'll bet.
And, of course, we had to have a little rattlesnake briefing to make sure that everybody knew how to conduct themselves in rattlesnake country. Yeah, but what was out there? Why did we go out there? I mean, it took us forever to get there. I mean, it's way out in the boonies.
I hit the tripodometer on the way in, and I think we drove in about 20 miles.
Yeah.
And that was through dirt roads and four-wheel drive roads. It wasn't too bad. I didn't really go into four-wheel drive until we started climbing hills. I just don't like to make my tires spin. That wears them out.
Uh-huh.
So I've got, shift on the fly four-wheel. Every time we hit a little hill, I would pop it into four-wheel so I wouldn't spit rocks to the cars behind me.
But these weren't even roads we were on. They were like...
These were just trails. These were tire ruts.
Yeah.
Yeah, nothing more than that. Yeah, they weren't roads at all.
And what did we see? What was there?
Lots of crystals. It was just incredible. The ground, it was just littered with crystals. I mean, it's the most incredible place I've ever been. It was just beautiful. I've got a lot of pictures from there.
Quartz crystals everywhere.
Just quartz crystals, clear ones, rose crystals, just all kinds of things. different colors. Just amazing. And next time I go, I'd like to bring a little, a little pick hammer.
Yeah. Did you get some nice ones?
Oh, I got a whole bunch of them. Yeah, we put some big ones out around the plants and on the bookshelves. And my wife took a lot of the little, just perfect little crystals that I found and filled a whole cereal bowl, a little black cereal bowl we have.
Uh-huh.
It looks really pretty. So.
when you have so many of them, it's just amazing that what you do with them. But when you, you know, when you go to a crystal shop and you see one of these little bitty things cost you $20.
Right. I was throwing things like that away because I figured there's better stuff out there, you know. It was just amazing.
And everybody got a big bag full of quartz crystals to take.
Right. Oh, everybody did. Yeah, the kids, some of the kids really enjoyed it out there. They were coming up showing me their big crystals and everything, and everybody had a ball.
And then something else of merit happened. We all took our pistols because we were going to shoot.
Right. Yeah, I just got my pistol, so I'm not good with it yet, and I don't think I hit anything. But everybody else was firing off, and of course, I had a famous little... I got to know your dog real well that time.
Well, tell everybody about Crusher.
Oh, yeah, that's funny. Well, I hadn't shown... I just picked up a Ruger Vaquero, just a single-action six-gun, 45. It's a beautiful little gun. I got a real good deal on it at the gun show. And I wanted to show it to Bill. He had shown me his gun. And so without thinking, which I will never do again, excuse me, Crusher was on a leash, thank God, right next to you. And I walked right up to Bill, not slowly either. I kind of just walked right up to him quickly and pulled the gun out of my belt. And next thing I knew, I had a Rottweiler in my face, actually in my guts, you know. And I moved faster than I have ever moved in my life. And you grabbed that leash, and between the two of us, he stuck a tooth through my T-shirt, and that was it. But my T-shirt was on my, you know, laying on my stomach when he grabbed it. So,
yeah.
Boy, that was he was a quick dog.
And he didn't bark either, did he?
No, not at all. No,
yeah, he's been trained to react to certain things, and a gun is one thing.
Right.
You pull a gun on me.
He was being so good, sitting there like a regular dog, you know, that I really didn't even think a thing of it. Just walked up, pulled out my gun. Next thing I knew, there was a Rottweiler coming at me.
Well, you got a story to tell. You can say...
I have a famous T-shirt.
You pulled a gun on Crusher and lived to tell about it.
Yeah, well, I feel good. I moved faster than he did, you know? But had you not grabbed that leash, that movement wouldn't have done much for me.
Well, actually, you didn't really move faster than he did, but you did move backward really good. But whenever people are around, because of what Crusher is trained to do,
right.
I always am holding the end of the leash, of course, in the right hand.
Right.
And in my left hand, I have it sort of choked up near his, as close to his neck as my hand can get. So
right.
He couldn't go really far because, you know, people don't think. And he's trained to react to a perceived threat. So if somebody just, you know, raises their arm real fast, you know, he could
say... with a gun in it.
Yeah.
Well, I felt his nose hit my stomach.
Oh, he was definitely serious.
Right there at me. Yeah. And I just took a quick step back real fast.
Did you
was fine. And you told us to sit down, and that was fine. And then I handed you my gun. And you looked at it. You know, that was that. That was the end of it. But it took me a few minutes to get my hands to stop shaking.
Adrenaline
hits you pretty good at a time like that.
It's pretty scary, huh?
Yeah. Really, yeah, very impressive dog. Yeah. Very, very impressive. Beautiful animal. Just solid muscle. He reminds you of a, the kind of muscle you see on bobcats or tigers or just rippling with muscle. Beautiful, beautiful creature.
Yeah. Did you see some of his toys?
Yeah, he loves to eat rocks and play with rocks.
Big rocks.
Talk about.
And he played with the big rocks all the time we were out there all 3 days, didn't he?
Yeah, he was digging them up and playing with them, and he's just a big puppy. So he needs to do what he needs to do, and then he doesn't look like a big puppy anymore.
No, not at all.
Very serious, yeah.
Scott, that night, we went back out. And we went to the mailbox first, and we stayed at the mailbox until about 1 o'clock in the morning.
Right.
And it was there that we finally saw them. You and I were the first ones to see it.
Right, yeah. You and Annie, as I recall, I had been talking to Pooh and showing her some different constellations and things. And you and Annie were kind of leaning on the mailbox, and I was just a few feet away leaning on the side of your truck. And I'm not sure where Pooh was. I think she was pooping out at that time. She was getting kind of tired. And I started to see, I saw two stars, what appeared to be stars at first on the horizon. And one of them was flickering different colors and different lights. And I thought maybe that was a star because it was very low on the horizon, and they'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
The other one was more orange. And so I watched that for, I don't know, about a minute or so. And I said, looked over at you, and I said, Bill, I'm seeing two stars that I don't think were there before. And you had your binoculars up, and you were looking at them, and you said, well, those aren't stars. I think the one on the left was, or the one on the right, I forget now.
The one on the right was the star.
That was did, yeah, right.
I had actually been watching these things for several minutes. In fact, I saw the two craft, actually probably the same craft, but I saw it come up above the mountain.
Right.
And take a couple of right turns and then go back down.
Go back down.
And then come back up again. And I had sent Annie to...
Different spot, yeah.
Yeah, I had sent Annie to get the binoculars because I knew what it was. But I had to verify it before I told everybody to watch it because if I'm the leader of the group, I can't tell you, you know, to there it is and then find out it's not, you know.
All right, and you don't want to lose that kind of credibility.
No, I can't play that way. So.
It was definitely, it appeared visually, it appeared to be a magnitude about 4 to 5 times that of Jupiter. And Jupiter's the largest planet or object in the sky, you know, that night.
And it was exceedingly
bright.
Yeah.
Yeah, flashing and pulsing. It was a really brilliant glow, would be the way I described it.
The whole craft, in fact, glows like it's some kind of a giant light bulb.
Exactly, right. It has an aura around, so it was hard to tell what was solid and what was light. It was hard to distinguish that. And Dick said that he thought that as he looked through it, he had those 10 power binoculars.
Uh-huh.
He said he thought the center of it looked more silver. But that's, you know, just what he said. I wasn't able to see it that way. And I realized right about that time I needed to grab my binoculars. Of course, I had left those in the truck. And I will be much more prepared next time for anything. And so I was walking backwards to the truck. And for about 3 seconds, I lost it. You know, while I reached in and people's heads were in the way. Then I got back and I looked at it in the binoculars. And it was quite an impressive thing. I think there were 2 of them. Actually, because at one point it went down, and I'm not sure that it was the same one that came up in a different place.
Uh-huh.
And well, I wondered, too, later I mentioned that if we had been on those hills, you know, I was kind of trying to figure where it was in the sky, and it was behind that one taller hill that you can't climb anymore, and I don't think we would have seen it had we driven in further, you know,
no,
that night.
As a matter of fact, I was just going to say that later I triangulated from where we were and where we saw it. It was north in the valley behind the mountain range,
exactly.
Behind the highest peaks, trying to escape observation.
From the hills that we had been on the 2 nights before.
We would never have seen it.
Yeah, right. Yeah, we never would have seen it. So I'm glad we were there.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was, we were, what, about 25 miles probably.
About 20 miles from where
from
it was.
From the area or from the hills?
From where it was actually flying.
Yeah, right. And to see something that size at that distance. I'm used to seeing 747s flying overhead at 35,000 feet, and that's only approximately 6 miles, and you can barely make out the object at that distance. And to see an object this size at 20 miles, it's hard to believe, really.
It was huge, wasn't it?
It was huge, yeah. I really had trouble figuring, but it was much bigger than a 747.
Now, one of the things that startled everybody, and I mean literally startled them, is this thing would rise up above the mountains, and then stop and hover.
Right.
And this was, in fact, on the western horizon where the stars were setting.
Right. Well, yeah, you could see the other stars going down there.
Yeah. And so it would hover, and then it would start back down, and then instantaneously, without making any turn or anything else, reverse its course at the same speed, 180 degrees, and go back up and hover again.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, there was absolutely no doubt.
And there is no way that any aerial craft that's known to the public mind is capable of doing such a thing.
Exactly. Nothing that I've ever heard of, yeah. Yeah, the only possible other explanation would be a holographic thing.
Well, that's true. It is possible, and I've made this statement on many occasions on this broadcast,
right.
It is possible that these things are holographic projections.
I told you about that satellite that I had been watching at home here about a year and a half ago. Do you remember that story I told you?
Yes.
About a satellite that was crossing from south to north along the eastern horizon.
Uh-huh.
And I noticed, this was like 5 or 6 nights in a row, that just behind the satellite, an orange shooting star would come down, same trajectory every night.
Uh-huh.
After 5 or 6 nights, you begin to think this is not a coincidence.
Yeah.
And each night it seemed to get a little bit closer to the satellite. And I thought perhaps I was watching a something from, you know, the Star Wars program. And one night my oldest son came home from a date, and he came out and sat on the porch with me, and we were talking. And I had told him about this, and I said, well, we're watched now. This is about the time. And all of a sudden we saw this satellite flying along, and we're watching it. And while we're watching looked at me and I looked at him and I said, what did you see? And he described exactly what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
And I confirmed that, and we just kind of shook our heads and didn't know what to make of that. But that must have been a holographic image of some sort.
I have no idea.
Yeah, and I'm, you know, like I say, I'm not too far from Sandia National Labs, so who knows what they're doing. But
yeah,
that was an amazing thing, too. So
we know that they have technology far beyond what
they're... Oh, yeah, no doubt about it. Yeah.
Everybody in our party saw this craft being test flown on Sunday night.
Well, except for one guy.
Who was that?
That was the guy. Gosh, I can't remember his name.
When I asked everybody, I didn't get any negative.
Later on, what he said was, we were telling him about it, and he said, "Well, okay, I'll take your word for it." And he sheepishly that it
was. Was he sleeping in the car?
Yeah.
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, you know, I can't remember his name. There were, you know, 21 people there, and I didn't get everybody's name memorized.
I know his name. I'm not going to embarrass him on the air.
Yeah, right. Oh, he was a real nice guy, and I think he felt really bad.
Yeah, I bet he did.
Yeah, but, I'll bet. Yeah, I wasn't aware. I thought everybody was outside because it looked like that. There were a bunch. Everybody was standing there looking.
See, that's a duplicate of what happened last year. Same thing happened last year. I told everybody, if you go to sleep, you're going to miss it if it flies, and I don't know if it's going to fly or not.
Right.
Nobody ever knows.
Sure, if you go to sleep, it'll fly when you're sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
right.
Last year, one guy got sleepy and went and slept in his camper. He had brought a camper, and he was just totally devastated when he found out that he had missed it.
Yeah, right. That was really a shame. Did anybody get pictures of it?
Yes, there are. Well, we don't know. We know that some photographs were taken with some good cameras with good telephoto lenses.
Right.
But we don't know if it's going to turn out yet.
All of my pictures turned out, but after that sighting was when I started having camera problems.
Yeah.
So I was curious. And I'm also curious, too, if anybody had any video equipment there and my camera was affected by a magnetic field, I assume that would affect their video equipment or their video tape.
I have no idea.
So maybe we can find out about that, too. Yeah. So I hope my camera's okay.
So everybody but one saw it this time. Yeah, that
exactly, makes... yeah. There must have been 20 people that saw it. Because there were 21 of us all together, I think, weren't there?
Not counting the children, yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, right. Right.
Quite a few children.
Yeah, everybody saw it, though.
Quite a few children this year.
Yeah, right. A lot of nice kids. Everybody there was so nice.
Well, what did you think about the trip?
I loved it. I had a wonderful time. You know, going there, I thought, gee, I'm not going to know anybody. But, you know, when you get there, nobody knows anybody. And everybody's kind of in the same boat. And I was really looking forward to meeting you. I've listened to you for so many years and really wanted to shake your hand. And I, of course, did that right away. And I just had a great time. I loved all the people. They were all just really nice, nice, friendly people. And very just a totally enjoyable trip. You know, everything about it was fun. Hanging out in the alien was fun, and seeing all the people coming from all over the country, all over the world, in fact. I never did run into that group of Germans. They ran into the cow on the way.
Yeah, it's open range. And
But it's quite an interesting place, and it's a place I want to go back to. There's something about that area. It's this desolate beauty.
Uh-huh.
The mountains were just exquisite, the hills and the Joshua trees. It's another world out there. It's a really beautiful place. So even, you know, the sighting was exciting, and going out there was exciting, but all of it was really enjoyable, you know. I just enjoyed every bit of the trip.
Now, along about Sunday afternoon, everybody started calling me Wild Bill. What was that all about?
Well, I started that because when we were racing across the lake bed. And that was fun, that dry lake bed.
When we raced across the dry lake bed?
Yeah, we were doing 100 miles an hour and, you know, just having a good time out there. And Wild Bill Hickok has always been one of my heroes.
Uh-huh.
And so I thought that seemed pretty appropriate. I meant that in the most complimentary way, too, I want you to know. So I came back and started calling you Wild Bill, and I guess that kind of caught on. So
yeah.
You may have a new nickname, but it's a good one. You know?
you and I actually took the lead out there and...
Yeah, you did, right, right. I was swinging way out, you know, in a big circle around you because you could drive anywhere on this lake bed. It was just an amazing thing. That was really fun that afternoon on Crystal Mountain.
Yeah.
And the drive back there. That was fun. I want to do that again, too. That's something I've always wanted to do is drive on a lake bed like that, you know.
Did you get to know Pat and Joe Travis at all?
Yeah, we got to know Pat and Joe pretty well, actually. They were really neat people. Joe, of course, left. out there.
Yeah.
And had a couple beers with Joe, and we fired the guns off. And he's a real nice guy.
Isn't he great?
And Pat's a really super lady and a great cook. And actually, everybody there was. The waitresses were great, and the two waiters kind of blew my mind there that first night. Cause,
oh, the twins.
Huh?
The twins?
Yeah, and Randy's brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, see, I didn't know they were twins. And at night, when I saw the one guy, he had no hair on his body whatsoever, and he looked kind of alien himself, you know. And then in the morning, when I had breakfast, he had a ponytail and a beard. And I really didn't know what to make of that, you know. And he told me, well, that's my twin brother.
Yeah.
But their voices were exactly the same, too. So
yeah.
I thought, oh, I wonder what these guys, you know. And then I saw them together, of course, and they were just twin brothers. But that was kind of fun, too, you know. That kind of sort of a Stephen King thing or something there, you know. But they were, everybody there was neat. Pat and Joe were really nice and helpful and sold me some stamps and just said, oh, give me your postcards and note cards that you're sending and I'll mail them for you. Real, real nice, friendly people. That's a great, neat place to visit.
Well, you know, we're out of time. So I want to thank you, Scott, for being a guest tonight and for your recounting of our trip and the sighting and... you know, we're batting 1,000 now for our yearly outing to Groom Dry Lake when I take people. I'm not batting 1,000 when I go by myself because I've sat out there sometimes for 2-3 weeks and not seen a thing.
Oh, yeah.
So we've been tremendously lucky. And I hope that the next time we go, we're just as lucky.
Well,
thank you so much.
Okay. I'm coming along. And I'll give you a call later in the week, too, because we got to build some bookshelves together, you and I.
That's right.
Yeah, so I'll get a hold of you during the week sometime. We'll set that up, too.
Okay, take care, Scott.
You bet. Thanks, Bill.
And good night, folks, and God bless each and every single one of you. And don't forget to keep your eyes on the skies, because if you really want to know what's going on in the sky, you got to get them off the ground. Remember, folks, don't buy into this extraterrestrial alien deception that they're trying to foist on the world. You see, if they can create an external threat to this Earth, it would be a real big incentive to do away with nation states and bring about their world utopian government, and that's really what it's all about. What we saw fly in Area 51 was not from any other world. It belongs to the United States government, was developed by the United States government, and is flown by the United States government.
This is my daddy station. I'm Pooh, classic radio like you always wished it could be. 101.1 FM, eager.
101.1 FM is owned and operated by the Independence Foundation Trust as a non-profit community service.
This is the voice of freedom. listening to the Worldwide Freedom Radio Network. Stay tuned now for all oldies most of the time. Classic radio, like you always wished it could be. Only the very best of the very best music of generations gone by.